Yes. This is John Fugelsang for the Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you from Talk Radio Day live from the United Nations, and we are very honored and pleased to welcome Radhika Kumaraswamy. Ms. Kumaraswamy was appointed by UN Secretary General Kofi Annan as Under Secretary General, Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict, and she serves as a moral voice and independent advocate to build awareness and give prominence to the rights and protection of boys and girls affected by armed conflict. Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to ask you, when you say to promote awareness and give prominence to the rights and protection of boys and girls affected by armed conflict, we're not just talking about children who are the victims of war. We're talking about actual children called to fight on the front lines, are we not?
Yes. What our office does a lot is focus on the issue of the grave violations that happen to children in conflict. And one of them is, of course, recruiting them as child soldiers. The other is they're often made into sex slaves, and there's a lot of sexual violence against children. Then there are the attacks on schools that deprive them of education, using their schools in military ways. Sometimes attacking, like in Afghanistan, we've had girls' schools attacked. We also look at issues of killing children. You know, sometimes we're having this phenomenon of child suicide bombs. The latest two suicide attacks, both in Afghanistan and Pakistan, were under 15, the children.
Really?
Yes.
There's been no coverage of this in the American media, has there?
Yeah, they have a child. I think it was in the New York Times, if I'm not mistaken. And we're also, we look at other issues as denial of humanitarian access and the refugee children and IDP children. But we work closely with our UNICEF, which is, of course, our partner in the field, and also the Security Council, because interestingly, they have taken this issue up, children in armed conflict. So that's been an important part of the challenge.
How do you find the awareness level to be in America and Europe of the plight of children in armed conflict areas?
Well, I think due to what took place in southern Sudan, for example, there have been a lot of children who have come from there to the United States, settled in Montana and North Dakota, and there have been a lot of films, and they've been speaking out a lot. So there's been that whole issue around them. Then I think in northern Uganda also, I think American NGOs are very active. And the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, and the horrific things that happened to children in that war by Joseph Kony. There's been quite a bit of awareness and a very strong movement here on that. And, of course, in Darfur.
Of course.
So because of those three wars, I think there is awareness about what happens to children in armed conflict situations.
What would you say, are there any estimates to the numbers of children who are being pulled in as soldiers into these conflicts?
Well, you know, during the height of the Liberian and the Sierra Leone war, as well as some of the other wars in Africa, we estimated it around 300,000. But now, those wars, many of them have gone down, so the numbers there have gone down. But we are now finding in Somalia, Iraq, and Afghanistan rapid recruitment of children. So sort of a changing nature of war and a new arena for warfare, and their children are being recruited in large numbers.
I remember as a child, my first understanding of this was during the Iran-Iraq war. Mm. And when, of course, in America, the Iran-Contra scandal broke, and it was revealed that the U.S. had been arming both sides of a war that was sending boys as young as seven to the front lines. Mm. It was unheard of at the time. And I've always found a traditional reluctance in the American media to cover this issue the way that the European media has. Mm-hmm. Do you have the same observation?
Not in recent times. We've had very good, I think CNN is actually running a program on trafficking at the moment, and they have focused on child soldiers. And I think there is. I've seen even on Fox News, I've seen some coverage of the child soldier issue. Maybe not all the issues, but on the child soldier issue, there has been greater coverage. But I think it's still not enough.
Of course,
it's not enough. But I think there is a momentum. There are very strong American human rights and civil rights groups working on this issue.
Oh, you mentioned the sexual exploitation of children. One thing that a lot of American troops visiting Afghanistan have been shocked by was the culture of what is known as the Bakabaz. On this very program, we interviewed a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who did a piece about it for the San Francisco Chronicle.
This is the dancing boys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this culture where, even though in the traditional Muslim society, same-sex relations are frowned upon, it's not considered to be gay because there's no love involved. It's merely for pleasure.
Yeah.
And there's a cultural belief that women are for procreation.
Right.
And many American troops have been shocked to see fully grown men with their boy, and
yeah.
to see that that's a status symbol.
Yeah.
A lot of troops who are fighting for Afghanistan have been understandably perplexed that this is the culture we're fighting
right.
for. And it's, in some circles, Afghanistan is considered the pedophilia capital of Asia. What can the UN do?
Well,
what can foreign entities do to try to raise awareness and try to
fight this,
combat this many yeah. generations of exploitation?
Well, we have in Afghanistan actually seized this issue. I was in Afghanistan 3 times now. And the first time I went there, I was told about this issue. And interestingly, the people who told me, why don't you fight on this issue, were the religious leaders. They're saying this practice
yes.
is carrying on and nobody is stopping it. So we raised the issue at that time with the, and then of course the government said, oh, we prosecuted under children. We said, no, it's a very important practice. And some of the worst perpetrators are your police and warlords.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what we have at this point to some extent done is that we've entered into an action plan with the police to release children, but also given our staff access to their living quarters so we can see their children there. So we're trying to cleanse at least the traditional forces of the Afghan government, the army, the police, of this practice. So their army commanders and army and police don't have bachabazi.
That's terrific.
So we are very strongly involved in this issue. We have in February we signed an agreement on this issue, but because we can't deal with the political warlords, it's more difficult. It has to be, we have to raise awareness. And what we are pushing the government to do is just one case. Give us one or two cases where you prosecute, put some people in jail, and that'll stop.
Do you think the Karzai government will ever do that?
Well, we have to keep the pressure on them, and that's what we're trying to do. They did redo the Ministry of Interior, hired a very powerful woman to head the investigation team on crimes against children. She was ready to go, but then the minister changed, and we don't know what has happened to that unit.
Oh, I see.
But I think what we need now is a few prosecutions.
I would imagine that when you're dealing with something like that, where it's not just an isolated incident of exploitation of children or a criminal incident, but it's rather something that's socially institutionalized over many,
yeah.
many generations, how can you raise awareness? How
right.
can you?
Well, you know, the UN is getting more and more experience of how to combat practices that are violent towards children and women that have been there for years. To be fair, by Afghanistan, this was a practice throughout the whole region. I mean, in the ancient Greeks also had this practice.
The Romans, of course.
Romans,
you know, made it an art form.
Yeah. So now, the thing is, it has lingered now. It's been sort of now in that area, and it just needs to be.
The famous Bible story of Jesus healing the Roman centurion's slave. But
yeah.
The Greek translation was a completely different word altogether. So, yeah, it's something that is historically not new.
Yeah.
And
but now we've managed to eradicate it everywhere except in this area, so we have to just go ahead. And what we find is the two ways to fight these practices. One is by punishing perpetrators and having some level of accountability. And the other is working through health and education services and all to raise awareness through the media and through education. So you have to do both.
Well, you are a lawyer, and you were the chairperson of the Sri Lanka Human Rights Commission. What do you think is the number one obstacle towards stopping organizations like the UN from doing more?
Well, I think... Well, first there's resources. But besides the resource issue, I think this there are cultures of resistance around the world to some of the norms and practices that the UN stands for. We think when you think about it, if you look at what all the human rights principles and human rights standards that the UN has promulgated, there are cultures of resistance about it. For women, for children, for even just civil rights. You know, you have resistance from sometimes security establishments and things like that. So it's really that we have to fight, I think, perhaps. But in a way in which people don't feel imposed upon,
mm-hmm.
but where they become just also take ownership of those values.
I'd like to ask you briefly about Haiti. I had the experience of working in Haiti last year, and I recently heard a survey 2 weeks ago that estimates that up to 73% of young girls in Haiti have been victims of rape.
Mm-hmm.
Americans, I think, have no idea the numbers and how bleak it is for young women in Haiti. What can you do? What can the UN or any concerned citizen do in a society that has been completely decimated and had the infrastructure just broken in half?
Well, I think Haiti is a very difficult question in the sense of having to rebuild a whole society to deal with these issues, including rape. But one thing we are learning, for example, in the Congo, where the rape is also about that amount of women they claim have been raped in 80% in a wartime context. And even the UN, we've been found fault with, because even though we have a small force, people expect us to protect all the women, and when we don't, there's a lot of pushback. And one of the things we're trying using now is mobile technology, a preventive thing, so that villages and women's groups, we're trying to create protection networks,
yes,
with mobile technology to be able to call into a peacekeeper's office, whatever, saying, you know, we're being under attack. And so we're trying to use those kinds of technology to try and do the prevention. UNICEF has what is called child protection networks. It gets some of the elders in the village to do the raising of awareness and education, but also to alert outside authorities if there are people coming to recruit children. So we're trying all these. I mean, it's like a drop in the ocean, but it's trying.
But when I look at America, I see that over the past 20 years, what's happened in terms of awareness of child exploitation and child sexual abuse, I get a lot of faith and optimism in that it's never been harder for a predator to interfere with a child than it is today.
Yes.
Young people have resources now they didn't have 20, 30 years ago, oh, and there's places they can go. Obviously, we're miles and miles away from,
yeah,
a decent society, but I do see it a marked improvement in America, and I think that it's only going to get tougher, at least in the first world, for people to exploit children. Do you see this expanding throughout the world and through mobile technology and just increased awareness in general that,
yes,
children can learn to go to someone?
Both for children as well as for sexual violence against women. Mm-hmm. There has been a sea change in the last 20 years about awareness and techniques on how to protect these children. What was interesting is before this post, I was the special rapporteur on violence against women. I did it for 9 years. And then when I left in 2003, that was, you must remember in 1975, when the issue of violence against women was brought to the UN, it was killed. They said, this is a taboo subject. Nobody wants to talk about it. Don't bring it. But in 2003, after the 1995 wave, it came back on the agenda. We found that every country in the world, except Bhutan, was beginning to pass laws or set up executive procedures or set up shelters. Something was being done everywhere. And I think that's because of the advocacy of a lot of the UN agencies in the field. So it's hopeful. And then you see that even recently in New York, I mean, I don't know whether he's guilty, but the fact that the head of the IMF can be brought up for a charge like that,
yes,
you know, is quite, it's good. It shows something.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think that the more powerful men are can be revealed to not have an ability to get away with this sort of thing,
mm-hmm,
the better it is for everyone.
Yeah.
One last question. What can people do if they want to help or learn more?
Well, I think on regard to, we have a website which they can go to, just Office of, I don't know the exact thing, but if you Google the special representative.
I think we have the exact thing.
UN.org/children/conference.
Yes.
UN.org/children/conflict to learn more and to learn how you can help.
And also, in UNICEF, we have begun to raise money for programs to reintegrate especially children affected by conflict, child soldiers, because once you release them, they're given to us, and we have to reintegrate them back into society.
That sounds like a very polite term for a very difficult job.
It's a very difficult job, because you know, they were once soldiers, so mothers find it very difficult to deal with this situation.
To have a 10-year-old child who's
killed people,
suddenly come back,
yes,
and be their son.
So you have to work with the child and the family and the community, so that requires resources.
Radhika Kumaraswamy is I was trying to get your title correct, the Special Representative for Children in Armed Conflict for the United Nations, and it is an honor to meet you. You are doing the Lord's work, and you make me proud of the human race.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so
All
much.
Right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.